so much. Welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday, February 9th, 2021 City Council meeting for the City of Aurora Grande. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Here.
Councilmember Storton?
Here.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Here.
Mayor Ray Rossum?
Here. Would you please silently join me in a moment of reflection? Thank you. Tonight, Councilmember Barnidge will be leading us in the flag salute.
Okay, thank you for that, Mayor. If you would just follow along with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Item 5 is agenda review. Tonight we have no closed session announcements for item 5A. For item 5B, I will go ahead and move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
Councilmember Barnidge seconds that.
We have a motion and a second on the floor. Do we have any discussion? Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russell.
Yes. Tonight's we've got two special presentations. They are both standing items. The first one, 6A, is our update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts, and I will turn it over to City Manager McDonald. You're muted, Whitney.
Thank you. Even better. Two out of the gate. Got my background all messed up, but now we're situated. Okay, so thank you for that introduction. We're here to talk, give a brief update on COVID-19 efforts and issues occurring in our community. I'll first just briefly talk about our vaccine clinic efforts. I'm sure folks are aware that the clinic in Arroyo Grande at the high school has been closed this week, similar with the clinic that's located in Paso Robles. The county decided to close both of those clinics for the week due to lack of enough doses. They have the Cuesta College location was open this week, but we are hearing, just wanted to let everybody know, we are hearing that the county at this time does intend to reopen the clinics next week. They may be looking at doing a less than 5 days a week kind of effort and schedule. We'll get more information as the week progresses. So we may be looking at a clinic that's open, for instance, maybe Tuesday through Thursday, in order to make sure that we're as efficient as possible with the doses that we do have to administer. So it's exciting to know that we will get those locations back open, especially for our community in the South County, so folks will be able to have a closer place to go and be able to get even more of our community members vaccinated. Also wanted to just highlight for anybody who's curious about sort of where we're at with our local COVID vaccine statistics that the county website at readyslow.org, they have a page devoted to the vaccine efforts, so you can find information about the numbers of vaccines that have been administered in our county and that have been sent here. And so if anybody is curious about that, there's resources available. The state has some resources as well on their COVID-19 website, but they're not, you know, quite as specific to our county as the Ready Slow version. So just wanted to point people in that direction if you're curious. And then lastly, I just wanted to highlight a few items from a press release that the county sent out this afternoon. This is where we get back into some kind of grim statistics and reminders for folks. I know things are definitely looking better, but we're not there yet. We are seeing, you know, quite a lot of benefits from the vaccines, and then just from, yeah, I think, perhaps changes in the way the vaccine or the way that the virus is spreading in the community. But the county let everybody know that today we crossed over the 200 deaths threshold in our county. 118 of the people we lost have occurred since the beginning of the year. So in a very short time frame, we've lost quite a segment of our population. Just to give people an idea as well, we currently are at 53% ICU capacity. So we still have a number of COVID-related people being treated in our hospitals. There are 33 members of the community in the hospital right now, and 6 of them are in the ICU. And that's pretty consistent with the numbers that we were seeing in the month or two before now. And so we are still seeing the very serious nature of the virus continues to be apparent and impacting us, even though we're certainly coming down from the highest high in terms of case rate. The seriousness is definitely still there for us to keep in mind. So with that, that's the last piece of information that I have for everybody this evening. I'm sorry it ended on not such a good note, but then again, it is COVID, I suppose, nature of the issue we're talking about. So I'm here to answer any questions, if you have any, that I may be able to answer.
And I would add just 2 more grim things into that. Your information is more current than mine because you meet with Dr. Bornstein more recently since I have, because we meet on Wednesdays. But last week she shared 2 very sobering statistics. In San Luis County, the death rate if you contract COVID at 75 or older is 25%. That is really, really hard number to hear. And it does speak to why we're concentrating on that age group right out the gate. There is a small study that is showing that ages 25 and up, the death rate is 5%. It's not a metadata study, so she's not sharing that in the same way as a local number. But so it's not as reliable, but she was sharing it because she continues to be frustrated by people who continue to discount the deadly nature of this disease. And without a doubt, it is something that we need to be working very diligently on, not only as individuals, but as a community. So let's check in and see who's got questions. Councilmember Barnage, any questions?
Just a quick question. I talked to Whitney earlier today about this, and actually I called Supervisor Compton this afternoon, too, but we've only texted. We haven't talked yet live. But I think that we all know that on this council, we've written to our representatives. We've emailed the governor, senators, talked to some aides on the phone. And the question I keep getting from the public over and over and over, and I don't have an answer to, is what's the allocation matrix? Why is San Luis County? Why did we get 900? And it's almost embarrassing that I say, I don't know. We've asked. Lots of other people that are way higher up than us have asked, and basically we're just in the dark. And it's my opinion that the reason the state is keeping us in the dark because they possibly want a chance to change. They want to be able to pivot and maybe change the allocation. And so the lack of transparency is pretty frustrating, whether it's intended or not. And that's just the question over and over. I realize we're a small county, and that I can certainly appreciate that. But I still would like the state to share with us how they decide how many allocations of the vaccine we're going to get each week. So I don't know, Whitney, if you think it would help if our council were to write a letter to the governor and ask for this. I think it would probably fall on deaf ears, but at least I'd be able to tell the constituents that, you know, as a council, we're united in trying to find out why we're getting what we're getting. So I want to know. I can bring it up during council communications, or we can talk about it here.
I would add that, did you see the letter that Assemblymember Cunningham and 6 other assembly members sent off to the governor's office that had very specific questions that were very similar to what you're asking but were very targeted? They have not yet received a response from the governor's office.
I didn't see that, but I did hear about that, and that's great. And I have mentioned that to our residents, but I just feel like we need to do something, even if it's just a letter. Maybe if the governor hears from enough municipalities, maybe we'll get some sort of an answer soon, sometime soon.
Councilmember Stortin, any questions?
No, I have none. Thank you.
Councilmember Dorn?
I have none. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Wendy. Thank you for that update. And that will take us to item 6B. So right back to City Manager McDonald for her City Manager's report.
Thank you. Wanted to highlight a couple things, and then I'm going to ask Bill Robeson, our Assistant City Manager and Public Works Director, to come on and give you some updates on a couple items there. So first off, just wanted to let everybody know that you're going to be meeting a new Community Development Director. Rob Fitzroy is starting with us on Thursday. We're very excited for him to join our team, and I'm thrilled to be able to Bill, we're creating a newly constituted executive team pretty soon here, and we'll be finally getting to a point where we're all fully staffed in that area. It's very exciting, and I know that Rob specifically is going to bring a huge amount of benefit and value to our community. He just left the county. He was the assistant planning director for the county for several years before agreeing to join us here at the city, and he brings with him a breadth of knowledge and understanding regarding planning and CEQA specifically as well, and so we're just excited that he's going to be joining us. We'll be looking to introduce him to the council as well and to the public fairly soon. I know it's a little interesting bringing on a new director during COVID times. It's not like you're going to be able to, it's not going to be out there actually meeting with folks, but at this point, you know, we're up and running really well and got our procedures in place to do things remotely, and so we're looking forward to kind of sliding him in there and letting him take off and accomplish quite a lot for the community. So we'll be seeing Rob come on soon. And then wanted to ask Bill to touch on a couple of items for you. One is just to give a brief update on where we are at with planning for repaving Olihan Alley. There were, you know, it rained recently, and so the schedule is sort of in flux, and so I just wanted to give him an opportunity to give you some new dates there. And then he'll also talk a bit about an issue with a corrugated metal pipe and that same storm that we saw last week. It feels like a long time ago, week before, and some of the damage that occurred there. So take it away.
Thank you. I'm going to share my screen if I can. Okay. So hopefully all of you are seeing kind of a shot of the parking lot at the Chevron station. Is that on your screen? Okay, thank you. So we wanted to give you an update of how we fared generally in the storms, and we fared pretty well. We didn't have much flooding. Everything was flowing very well. All the streets, the drainage inlets were flowing well. The area that we had some issues in is kind of a pattern that we're seeing. And it has to do with our corrugated metal pipes around our city. And let me just advance these slides, and I'll start to get into it a little bit. But what you're seeing here is the Chevron station, Grand, and the freeway entrance is off in the distance there with that white truck. And then the Shell station is right across the street. So this area connects with the Caltrans kind of drainage basin. It's a very shallow basin, and then the runoff, the stormwater actually goes down into the creek. So we cordoned this off, and here's another shot. There's a new drainage inlet here that Chevron put in, although it really only takes the surface water and then takes it out into the same area. The area that we're going to be looking at is right in here. Can you see my cursor? Okay, great. So you can start to see this bowled out area. The fence is starting to slant over. And there's more of a close-up of two shots. But this is obviously starting to go up underneath this new curb and gutter, and then back up under the asphalt on the side in the parking lot. So that's about 10 feet down, and the pipe is about 10 feet down, but it's collapsed. Water is still flowing through it, and as an aerial, you can see the blue 30-inch CMP, and that is the corrugated metal pipe that goes underneath the parking lot. You can see the canopy where you pull up to fill up your car, and this is the area where we were seeing that the blowout at the end of that drain pipe. So the water comes from the watershed up north in this area, excuse me, and then it all goes into a drainage system that goes underneath Branch Street, and then surface flows into this basin. So we have an underground pipe here, which is not corrugated metal pipe. It's high-density polyurethane, and that's what we want. That's the more much more long-lasting, much more durable pipe material. So it outlets into this shallow basin, goes surface drains, goes into the mouth of this 30-inch CMP, goes underneath, and then outlets here and starts to follow this drainage pattern and goes out into the creek. So what we've found is that it's collapsed totally, especially in this outfall area. We have a temporary fix where we put a smaller diameter pipe that's corrugated plastic to keep that from degrading even more. So any storms that we have, we'll keep it in a pretty safe condition. Although, as you go back up under, you know, we're seeing some undulating in the pipe and some degradation in that area too. So the best course of action that we're finding is to abandon this pipe, plug each end, fill it with slurry, and then have to go down the property line all the way out to the creek with an HDPE pipe. Again, that's high-density polyethylene, and that would be a larger diameter pipe. We'd have to go through some pretty complicated permitting down here to work in the creek, get the outfall energy dissipator, and then up in here we would have some filtration systems as well. So that seems to be happening every year now. We have at least one significant failure of our corrugated metal pipe system. And these were put in back in the 70s, 80s, and they last, you know, about 35 to 40 years tops. And unfortunately, we have quite a few around the city. So I wanted to kind of touch on this, transition a little bit into a larger picture of what's happening in the city, and we can talk about these topics in the future, but it's a deferred maintenance issue that that I brought up with the council in the past, and it's something that I just wanted to touch on today. But the property is laid out this way. There's three parcels, all under the same ownership, so we're dealing with the owner of the Chevron gas station, and because obviously an easement's going to need to be agreed upon to have that red dashed line placed where the, or actually have the pipe installed in that red dashed line location. That's the other piece, and then we have a small piece that goes in this, which is where that the drainage depression is. So just to jump to this for a moment, I didn't want to get too deep into it, but I wanted to give you an idea of what we're looking at in this area. I think it's one of the main risks that we're facing as a city as far as deferred maintenance and costs that we're going to be incurring over the years. So we have about 2.2 miles of this CMP, and to reline that, to have a company come in and put a high-density polyurethane coating inside the pipes rather than taking them out or digging them out, that's the easiest and quickest way to do it. We're looking at about, you know, $5 to $6 million to do that across our city, and we don't have to do it all at one time. We'll prioritize the pipes, and we'll start to move on that. But just as a aside, we only have about $45,000 annually budgeted for this relining of corrugated metal pipe. And then when we wait for it to fail, we're finding that it's about 3 to 4 times more expensive to deal with it. So when we have this pipe, for example, we had a cost estimated at about $55,000 to $60,000 to do this pipe if we were to be able to reline it. But now we're looking at a cost of about $150,000 to have that new pipe location, the easement, all the infrastructure and concrete work that has to be done at each end. So what I would like to do is just plug this into your minds one more time. I know I've done it in the past, but we would like to look at a 5-year program when the time comes when we can consider when we're anticipating future funding sources, so that we can start to incrementally tackle this and really save a large amount of money in the future. And this is over, you know, a 10-year span. So I want to just brief you on that and answer any questions you have if you have any.
Thank you very much, City Manager Robinson or Assistant City Manager Robinson. Let's check in with the council and see if there's any questions for either you or for City Manager McDonald. Council Member George, any questions?
I have none, thank you.
Council Member Storton, any questions?
I have no questions, thank you.
Council Member Barnidge, any questions?
Just one quick question, Bill. If we reline the pipes, how long do they last? Do they last quite a bit of time versus replacing them completely?
The amount of time that they last is very comparable. So if we can get a lining project going in there and have the thickness of the pipe and the material the same as a pipe that you would normally just trench and place in the ground, it's approximately the same. So it's just a quicker, more economical way than cutting the street out and then digging out a trench and then putting it back, a pipe down into the ground. That relining process is much more economical and timely.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Thank you, Bill, for the report, and it's certainly important to reinforce these deferred maintenance program needs that we need to prioritize, especially as it relates to future supplemental funding sources. I just wanted to make a quick comment on actually the city manager report and welcome Rob Fitzroy as our community development director, and also thank City Manager McDonald for serving in that dual capacity as acting community development director and city manager. That's been a lot of work, I'm sure an incredible burden to carry for our city, and much thanks. You've done a great job in that role.
Thank you. And further, speaking to the length of this closure, this is the second director we've brought on. We have never met Director Stevens live either. So I look forward to getting a chance to have a nice hello once this is all over with our new team. So thank you for both of those reports, and we will go ahead and move forward then. Let me open up public comment and see if there's anybody on the line who would like to speak on items 6A or 6B.
Madam Mayor, there are no members of the public in attendance.
Thank you. Well, I think that answers the question for question seven, but just in case, item seven is our public comment. So giving it a quick count to three. Has anyone added since the last time you looked?
No, there's still no one.
Okay, thank you. So I'll go ahead and close public comment. And this takes us, for items that are not on tonight's agenda, item seven, that takes us to item eight. This is the consent agenda, and tonight we have five things on the agenda, item 8A through 8B. Does anyone have any items that they would like to pull for separate consideration or questions?
I do. I just have a question on 8E, please.
Okay. And I have a question about 8E. And Councilor Barnett, can you pull? Councilor George?
I just have a question on 8B, so I'll piggyback when you get there.
Mayor Pro Tem?
I just have a comment on 8B, so same thing. Thank you.
Well, then let's take that in order. So we'll start with 8B, and my question is really honestly just a veiled comment, to be totally honest. So if we could bring Director Stevens on, is he here tonight?
Hi.
Hi there, Mr. Stevens.
Hi, how are you?
Great. In three words or less, can you tell me the outcome of the CAFR, please?
Certainly. The city was given an unmodified option, which, well, three.
Go ahead.
I can't do it. Basically, an unmodified option just assures that the CAFR is fairly represented or represents the financial position of the city. That's basically what an unmodified.
Excellent. And from the, let's go ahead and ask Councilmember George to piggyback.
Thank you. So I wanted to double piggyback, I guess. Piggyback on a conversation we had 2 weeks ago regarding the use of 1090 funds for COVID relief. And in the CAFR report, we saw a 25% reserve. So my question to council is, it's 5% over what we try to keep in, which is 20%. So is there a way for us to have discussions on that 5% and include that into some form of COVID relief as well? So that was it.
We certainly can. We're talking about in the future to have a discussion. I'm planning to present a five-year forecast next month or actually at the next council meeting, so maybe we can have that discussion at that time if the board will.
Sure, and maybe when City Manager McDonald works on the 1090 fund proposal, we can also consider. I just like to see what our full bucket of money we have to work with is, as opposed to just focusing on 1090 funds. If we have a reserve that is over what the city likes to have as a minimum, which I believe is an extra 5%, whatever that number, that 5% number is, if we could add that to the pot for consideration.
Maybe I can provide a little, a forecast a little bit about the way I'm foreseeing that discussion going for our next meeting. And so in addition to the five-year financial forecast or projection, we're also looking to have both a discussion of short-term COVID relief programs and a discussion of longer-term or short-term SB 1090 economic development priorities. So when we talked about the council's priorities back last fall, we talked about trying to look at our SB 1090 funds in kind of a progressive manner. So first starting with some priority setting discussions and then looking at kind of like a spending plan for the money. But at this point, I think what we're envisioning is bringing forward two agenda items that are really complementary. One is a priority setting discussion, and then the other is talking about some specific COVID relief programs that will talk about using 1090 funds to fund those programs, but that's not necessarily the only pot that we can discuss. So we can certainly describe, you know, all the different we can describe the funding options for those short-term items, and that honestly, even for the longer-term economic development priorities as well. So I think we'll have some leeway at our next meeting to get into that.
Great. Thank you so much. That was my only question.
Hey, Mayor Pro Tem Paulding, any questions? You wanted
just a comment. I can make that now if you'd like, or
wait. Why don't we wait until after public comments, so we'll go back to commentary at that time. So let's go ahead and open it up to public comments. We'll check in with AGP.
Madam Mayor, there's still no one in attendance.
All right, so let's bring it back around to us for comment. And Mayor Pro Tem, since you're going, go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. I would just concur with Councilmember George in that it would be good to see that 5% that we see over our reserve target and talk about how we might invest that in our community. And so it would be good to discuss that when we get the financial report next month or later this month. And then also, I appreciate Mr. Stevens explaining that an unmodified opinion is a good opinion in terms of this financial report, as opposed to a modified or adverse opinion. And I also appreciate the fact that that we have a timely report in this regard. So thank you to staff for getting that to us. Those are all my comments. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Barnage. Any comments? Councilmember Storton, any comments? Councilmember George, any comments? Okay, and mine is only an appreciation of staff, and the word opinion was the third word I was waiting for, Mr. Stevens. So I'm very happy, and every time this comes, I have not experienced not having an unmodified. So that is to the integrity of our financial services here in the city for decades running. So I'm very proud of that. So thank you so much. Item 8E, Councilmember George. Oh, wait, sorry, Councilmember Storton.
Yes, thank you very much. I just wanted to open this up real quick for the city manager to provide a little bit of discussion, maybe just for our purposes and certainly for any citizens that are listening or might listen at this recorded opportunity at a later time. But this item is our ability to execute an agreement with the county in order to hopefully receive COVID relief funds for the city, all the cities in the county, for the works that they're doing for the pod centers and vaccination efforts. Although we're trying to complete the paperwork, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get the money, which means this is money that we're spending that is unplanned and unbudgeted. So as we do have these discussions of 1090 funds and 5% extra and things like that, these are things that come up that are not planned for our budget. So I was hoping that the city manager could just highlight it a little bit more.
Sure, thank you for the opportunity. I am happy to be able to bring this reimbursement agreement for council's consideration. It does give us that vehicle to hopefully get some of our funding back as part, really passed through the county. So basically, if the county receives funding from the state or federal government, then we are looking at potentially getting a proportion of our costs back as well. We learned that the county has been at least preliminarily allocated $7.7 million in FEMA funding last week. So it's very new and fresh, which gives us some hope. We may see some of our costs come back to us. So to get an idea of what we're looking at and sort of the efforts we've put in into the pods, the clinics themselves, a lot of the work has been done by our Five Cities Fire Authority. Our fire chief specifically, as well as his staff, has put a tremendous amount of effort into planning for and operating these clinics. If anybody's been to a clinic, you probably would have seen some of our firefighters there actually administering the vaccines. We're glad that may be shifting and changing because the state has actually started sending some state workers to staff our clinics, so we're getting a little bit of relief to our first responders to be able to go back to their ordinary duties. And so those types of costs we haven't incurred directly, but they are FCFA costs, and luckily the FCFA is a party to the agreement specifically, and so they will be eligible to receive reimbursement through the agreement as well. And to date, we tried to put together kind of a rough estimate of what we think we may have incurred from staffing really just 2 weeks worth of the pod at the high school. But and by pod, that's an acronym we're using for point of distribution. It's really just referring to that clinic. We think it's a roughly around $5,000 in overtime for our police officers who were called to staff the clinic on their days off. And so that's most likely going to be where we see those costs coming to bear. In addition, we have been sending disaster service workers to the clinics to volunteer, not to administer vaccines. We're not qualified to do that. I don't think anybody wants us getting close to them with the needle. But we have been providing some assistance in helping kind of people get through the process and on the administrative side. And it's been wonderful to be able to open that opportunity up as well to you all to volunteer to join us as disaster service workers at the clinics. So those workers really we're not seeing extra expenses for them because those are folks who are really just taking time out of their day, well, actually taking their entire day to spend at the clinic rather than doing their ordinary duties. So that's not an extra cost, but it is meaning that we have people not fulfilling their ordinary duties for a day or two, or depending on what we can bear, really, in terms of what we can lose from people for certain days. So we're playing it week by week to try to provide up to two people to provide administrative support, and that's in addition to our police officers who are there staffing. We have somebody there every day that the clinic is open for the whole time. And I will just say that I was lucky enough to go for one of the days, and it was an incredibly rewarding experience to be there. So it's not all terrible or anything. It's really lovely to see everybody and to see them getting this vaccine that we know is could save their life. It's a really moving kind of experience, and it's a wonderful opportunity, but it's also taking time out of our otherwise full schedules to do that work. But we know this is what's going to get us out of this pandemic, so we're all hands on deck with this effort.
Thanks. That's the only question I had, and really it was just an opportunity to highlight the extra work that our city employees do beyond the everyday kind of what I would call normal stuff. Certainly it's not normal, but I'm happy that our city's in a position to help as it can in this critical time. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm sorry that I took our commentary out of order and the public comment because I neglected to ask about 8E. So I'm going to go back around and just double check and make sure nobody's got anything that they've got that they want to comment on, both from the public and the council. So let's open up public comment again. And to be clear, I'm asking about items 8A through 8E. So let me again double check with AGP and see if there's anyone here who'd like to comment.
Madam Mayor, there's no one in attendance.
Thank you. And I know we've already heard commentary from everyone, but just a nod or whatever. Councilmember Barnage, any additional comments?
No, thank you.
Councilmember Storton, any additional comments? Councilmember George?
No, I just wanted to thank our employees that did take time out of their normal work schedule to work as disaster service workers. It was it's something that I would love to do if I could, but it's not the right time for me right now. But thank you so much for the ones that are able to step up.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem,
any additional comments?
Okay. And to the city manager, I know that many of us on the council here are working, and we've expressed an interest in doing a half shift in being able to take a half day off. So please continue to ask on our behalf and see if we can participate and show the public that we're standing there with them. We would love to do it, but a full day for a full-time worker is tough. So thank you so much. So would anyone like to make a motion?
This is Councilmember Barnage. Thank you, Mayor, and I would move for approval of items 8A through 8E.
Councilmember George, I'll second.
Okay, any discussion? All right, City Clerk Porter, can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Councilmember Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russell?
Yes. Let me open my agenda again. I navigated to Zoom. For item 9, public hearings, we have none. Item 10, old business, we have none. Item 11, new business, we have none, which takes us to council communications. I do have something to communicate tonight. I'm going to try and make it quick. There is a new coalition of California mayors that has been forming. It's a grassroots organization. It does not require dues or anything. And I wanted to tell you that I went ahead and signed up for this. It's not signing the city up for anything. It's just mayors getting together. And the intent of the coalition is essentially the idea is the Big 13. The Big 13 are the 13 major cities with over 300,000 people in the state of California that are getting the lion's share of just about everything in COVID. And this is the rest of us getting together and forming this network of people that can write, that can advocate, and that can just share information. As of right now, there are over 100 mayors of the other 470-something cities that represent 70% of the population in California. So I signed up for that coalition and went to the first big meeting of it. It's actually been going for a while, but it's gained steam in about the last month. Mayor Patino from Santa Maria was there, and then myself, and I don't think there's anybody else from the Central Coast, but I will be sharing that with our other six mayors in San Luis County. I did want to tell you what the discussion points were in that, and should that become something that gains steam, I'll continue to report out for you on that. So again, there were over 100 mayors that were on that Zoom call. The guest speaker was Anthony Rendon, the California Assembly Speaker, and he was discussing the importance of what we're doing because what he sees, again, are the Big 13, and that they are well-organized and well-funded, and they have lobbyists sitting up there, and the rest of us don't. He expressed some of those same statistics, that there are 40 million people in California, and 70% of them live in cities that are less than 300,000 people. And he expressed, these are his words, he expressed the challenge of a one-man show for governor. And that was very interesting coming from someone in the same political party. So that shows that there's a little frustration out there with the lack of information that Councilmember Barnidge expressed earlier and that we've all expressed in various forms in the last few months. They suggested that we pay attention to SB 9 and 10. These are housing bills. I have not yet had a chance to look into them, but I want to pass that on to you in case you have time to look. I have, again, not quite had time to take a look at those, but those are in committee right now. And among the things that one of those is proposing is something called a Housing Accountability Unit, which is $4.3 million to have people from that committee attend local council meetings like ours to monitor what we're doing. That's a little scary. So we should keep that on our radar. And another very interesting thing that came out of this that I want to float past this council was a very small city in the LA basin, and I can't remember which one it was. They floated, because of the low interest rates right now, they passed a municipal bond to pay off their CalPERS debt. And they got that municipal bond at 2.66%. Right now, we're paying 7%, and that's a variable with CalPERS, as you all well know. So that is a very interesting financing opportunity that I don't know that we've considered here, and especially with rates as low as they are, I wanted to kind of put that on our radar and into staff's radar for a potential to be able to take care of to better take care of our PERS liability, unfunded liabilities. So perhaps that's a conversation we can have going forward. And with that, I will see and let you all chime in on your own for who else might have council communications.
This is Councilmember Barnidge. I just wanted to see if I could get another council member or a consensus to have a letter sent to the governor's office about the allocation for San Luis Obispo County and how they're arriving at that.
Similar to what we... Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, similar to the letter that we sent representing all the cities, would this be a better opportunity to try to get a stronger group, similar to that letter that was sent, as opposed to just the city of Rio Grande?
Right. I'm certainly, I mean, obviously that's better. I prefer that. I just don't want to put too much on staff's plate. So I'm happy to help reaching out to, you know, the mayors or city managers or Whitney, if you have a different suggestion, but I'd certainly be open to that as well.
I can certainly raise this. We have a regular call on Wednesday evenings, and so I can certainly raise the topic and see if there's anybody who's interested in joining in. Maybe if there is direction this evening to move forward with a letter, perhaps it could, you know, direct me to look into that and see if it's possible. But either way, bring back a letter depending on what the results are of that effort, and then that letter can be considered by your council and go from there.
Sounds good to me. Thank you, Whitney. We'll see what everyone else thinks.
I would definitely be in support of that. I don't mean to be fatalistic, but I don't want to task staff in writing a letter that we already know isn't going to do anything. Staff's got so much to do, but if we have the power of all five council members on multiple cities, then maybe that's worth doing. But I've learned, I mean, we've already sent one from all seven mayors, so and the assembly members, not just one, but a coalition of them. It continues to not only go unheeded, but unanswered. So,
I agree, but we did send one. You know, why are we lumped in with Southern California, which I thought was kind of moot at the point at that point in time. And so I just feel like we owe it to our constituents to do that. Yes, we might not hear back, but I feel better knowing that we sent one, and at least we can sort of tell people that we have. So if it's not too much trouble, Whitney, if you think other people will sign on and you get the consensus, I'd certainly be in support of bringing it back with all the cities in the county.
And just to make sure I'm clear, is it to request information or is it to request more vaccines or is it both? I mean, I know the intended result is that we get more vaccines. So maybe it could address both issues, just generally advocating for more vaccines allocated to our county and also requesting more information about how those allocations are made. Does that summarize it?
Yes, perfectly. Thank you.
Okay.
Anyone else? All right, everyone. Thank you so much for a very efficient meeting. That takes us to item 13, closed session. We have none. So item 14 is adjournment. I will look forward to seeing you all virtually in 2 weeks.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good evening.